All right, good to see you. As I mentioned before, if you want to go ahead and start turning in your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 2, that's where we'll get started. But just as a way of reminder, in our last study, we noticed the end of King David's life as he, number one, prepared Solomon for this transition. And in doing that, he made some requests of Solomon. We'll refer back to those in this study tonight. And then we also looked at the end of his life here on earth and considered, again, his reign as king. And then finally, as we were departing, we noticed how after David's passing, King Solomon was able to establish himself as king now. And we're going to reflect back as we go forward on that promise God made to David and to Solomon, and even to Saul earlier, about walking in faithfulness and how important that is. And we see that really play out in Solomon's life. All right, so as we get into our study tonight, we're going to look at three things. Number one, David made those requests of Solomon. Well, we're going to see how those play out as we move forward. King Solomon's going to proclaim some punishments on some individuals as we move forward. We'll see Solomon's request from God for prayer, for wisdom, and the results of that. And then we'll see how his wisdom, God gives him all this wisdom. Well, it's tested, and we'll notice kind of an interesting interaction he has with a couple of ladies in showing, displaying his wisdom. All right, so as I mentioned, let's go ahead and go to chapter 2. Now, there are a couple individuals that we're going to talk about. First guy is Adonijah. Now, who is he? Solomon's brother. He is. He's also the guy that you remember tried to set himself up as king. He saw David getting older, and he thought, well, I'm the oldest, so I'm going to be king. And he throws a big party, and that's when Bathsheba gets involved. And she reminds David, you made a promise. You made a promise to me and to my son, to our son Solomon, that he would be king. And, of course, that leads to Solomon's becoming king. Now, what was, in regard to his brother, what did Solomon tell him? Do you remember?
Basically, as long as you do good, you'll be fine. If you don't, you won't.
Yeah, so he says just behave yourself honorably as a worthy man, you're fine. Not a hair on your head will fall. However, if you prove not to be a worthy man, then other things may happen. So that was how it was kind of left there prior to the death of David. Now, David has passed on, and so in chapter 2 and verse 13, what does he do? The text tells us he went to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon, and so she says, she starts off by saying, interestingly enough, do you come peacefully? I don't know what she might have expected he was up to, but you can kind of tell right away, like, she's worried he's up to something. And so what's his response? Verse 13. I'm going to scoot forward just a little bit because this is squeaking like crazy, this floorboard is, and it's driving me nuts.
He said that since Solomon was the son of Bathsheba, if she would ask for him, Solomon wouldn't say no.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he made a request of her to make to Solomon.
All right, well, let's go on and talk about that request. So verse 16, he says, now I have one request to make of you. Do not refuse me. Interesting kind of way to phrase that. she said to him, speak. Verse 17, he said, please ask King Solomon, And he will not refuse you, just what Jody was saying, to give me Abishag, the Shunammite, as my wife. Now, who is she, by the way? Do you remember who she is?
She was David's wife.
Mm-mm.
That kept David warm.
Yeah.
Well, he was married to her.
No, I don't think text ever says he married her. But she came, when David had become bedridden, she was basically kind of, what's the word? He's given that care. I know Miss Lynn's familiar with this.
He was old and got cold.
Yeah, she was kind of taking care of him. Now, they didn't have a sexual relationship. Text tells us that. But she was there just to kind of care for him, and kind of give him final care, right, as he's moving on to his eternity. And so she was there caring for him. Now, what the text doesn't tell us is why he's asking for her. I think that's interesting. But he just asked her to be his wife. And so Bathsheba said, "Very well, I will speak for you to the king." Now, she doesn't seem upset about it, the request, put off by doing it. She says, "I'll do it." Okay, and so if you go on and read the rest of the text here, verse 19, she goes to King Solomon to speak to him on behalf of Adonijah. And the king rose to meet her and bowed down to her. And you kind of, I think it's interesting, you see the interplay of Solomon with his mother. I think it's interesting that he bowed down to her. Now, he's king. And so, but you kind of almost see this reversal of respect given to her. Again, you know, we mentioned this before, but in Proverbs 31, you know, a lot of people believe that King Lemuel is actually Solomon, and the woman he's speaking of course, then would be Bathsheba. In Proverbs 31, we call her the virtuous woman, right? Now, whether that's true or not, we can differ. People differ on that idea. But you do see here the respect he has for his mother. It says, then he sat on his throne and had a seat brought for the king's mother. All right, so they sit down together. Verse 20, she then gets into why she's here. She says, "I have one small request to make of you. Do not refuse me." The king said to her, "Make your request, my mother, for I will not refuse you." Well, maybe he should have waited to say that. Verse 21, she said, "Let Abishag, the Shunammite, be given to Adonijah, your brother, as his wife." Seems a pretty benign request. She's not married. She's probably a younger woman. And her hopes for marriage may be kind of low. I don't know. But notice the response Solomon gives. He answered his mother, verse 22. He said, "Why do you ask Abishag, the Shunammite, for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also, for he is my older brother, and on his side are Abiathar the priest and Joab, the son of Zeruiah." All right, we're going to come back to those two later. But it's interesting, we'll finish this out in just a second, but how does he respond? If you were to summarize what he basically says back, what is it?
It's a political move.
Okay, he believes it's a political move.
His brother wanted to be king, and so how you can supplant Solomon is to kind of get David's confident people under your camp.
And we've already noticed how the nation is kind of divided a little bit. Now, Solomon's been able to kind of bring some unity back, but they've already began to speak of themselves in kind of diverse, in some divisive terminology. Like the 10 tribes already starting to break off from the two southern tribes. And maybe it's a fear of growing division. You also notice here, he does note he's my older brother. So what's the Jewish tradition as far as families go? Younger serves the elder. Which is why what Joshua says, I mean not Joshua, Joseph says to his other brothers is so shocking. At the time he's the youngest brother, and what's the dream he has? He says, the dream I have says you're going to serve me. Well, in Jewish culture, that's shocking. That's kind of, that's a crazy kind of idea, isn't it? Because that's normally, it's the older siblings that have the more honor, if you will. So the oldest would receive the majority of the inheritance. Also, you go to later on in the parable of the two sons, the prodigal and the older brother. Who's the one that runs away? Well, it's the prodigal. One of the shocking things about the prodigal's request is that he is the youngest. He should not get the inheritance first, yet he asked for his first. That would be a really shocking thing to a Jew. That's not the way you do things. It always goes in descending order. And so so Solomon's king, when in Jewish normal workings, it would not go to him. It would have went to the other brother. So you note here, he says, ask for him the kingdom also. So you can tell he knows something is up, that his brother's up to something. And so verse 22. So let's go on, verse 23, 1 Kings chapter 2. It says, then Solomon swore by the Lord, saying, I lost my place here, sorry. God do so to me and more also if this word does not cost Adonijah his life. Now therefore, as the Lord lives, who has established me and placed me on the throne of David, my father. Who do you say placed him on the throne? Not David. He says, the Lord placed me on the throne. That's pretty important. His brother tried to place himself on the throne, not by the providence of God. Solomon says, God put me here. Now, therefore, as the Lord lives, who established me and placed me on the throne of David my father, who has made me a house, as he promised, talking about God, Adonijah shall be put to death today. Verse 25, so King Solomon sent Benhadad, the son of Jehoiada, and he struck him down and he died. That's a quick kind of turnover, but I mean, it might seem like a little thing, but Solomon obviously sees this as a much bigger deal than maybe it seems on the first. You notice even Bathsheba doesn't question him and say, why are you asking for her? And so...
So I guess the answer was no.
yeah. And it's funny, you know, not funny, but it's... kind of one of those things, I guess, Solomon wish he had his word back. When she asked, she said, don't refuse me. And he said, I won't refuse you. He did. He said, that's not going to happen. So you have the end of his life. David's children are, I mean, look at what's happening in that family. With Absalom and Tamar, with Amnon and now Adonijah. I mean, it's not going well. But didn't God say that? Second Samuel chapter 12. That's what he told David. He warned him. This is what's going to happen. The sword shall not depart from your family. And so again, you have another brother executing another brother. And it's happened several times. Any questions about him before we move on to Abiathar? Who's Abiathar? Who's this guy? Give me a summary here. kind of a good check to see how we're following along with class. How good of a job am I doing? He's a priest. He's the high priest. What do we know about him? A little summary. Mm-hmm. Yes, and we'll find that out here in just a minute, but you're right. I want to come back to that in a minute.
With the insurrection, okay. If you will, and trying to put the other guy.
Who's the insurrection?
Abidor, whatever his name is, the oldest son of Solomon, who wanted the throne, he took the priest and Joab as his confidants.
And they went along with him to throw that big party. You remember that big party when Adonijah wanted, he said, I'm going to be king now, and he starts telling everybody this. I wonder if he tried to follow the example of Absalom. You remember Absalom kind of did something similar, where Absalom sat in the gate, and he was telling people, oh, David's a bad king, right? We need better leadership, and he divided the kingdom and pulled most of the people over to himself. The same thing is attempted by this brother, and now he's gone, by the way. And now you've got Abiathar, high priest, goes along with it, and he and Joab follow Adonijah into his folly. All right, so let's go in that same text down to verse 26. It says, and to Abiathar the priest the king said, so he brings him before him, Solomon does, and he's going to kind of talk to him. Now remember what David said. What did David say? What was his request in regard to Abiathar?
That he shouldn't go to the grave as an old man.
Don't let him go to the grave with gray hair, right? Basically saying, you need to execute him. Bring justice. David's asking for justice. So he says, verse 26, go to Anath, to your estate. You deserve death. But I will not at this time put you to death, because you carried the ark of the Lord God before David my father, and because you shared in all my father's affliction. What's he talking about there? What is he talking about? He shared in all of my father's affliction. Now, Abiathar is an interesting character, because at one point he's on David's side, and the next point he's on...
When David had to flee because of Absalom.
Exactly. So he was the priest that actually went with David. He helped David out during all of that. And so Solomon has kind of a torn situation. He did well for his father, but he didn't do Solomon so well. And so he's like, you know, and so he's kind of put between a rock and a hard place. And so he says, I want you to go. Basically, he's expelling him out of his sight, right? So just, you need to go. You can live out your days on your family's property at their home. So verse 27, he expelled Abiathar from being priest to the Lord, thus fulfilling the word of the Lord that he had spoken concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. Now, real quickly, who's Eli? Oh, y'all know who Eli is, right?
He was a prophet.
Tell me a little bit about Eli. Let's summarize him real quick. Who's Eli?
Prophet, judge of Israel.
Okay. He was next to the last judge of Israel. Who was the last judge of Israel?
Samuel,
right? And so Eli is judge. Is he a good judge? Was he a good judge?
No. Well, he was a good judge.
He was
his sons were not.
So he was a decent judge, but where did he mess up? His children. He was not the kind of father he needed to be, and he let his children. And he's pretty much told this. God tells him, you let your children run wild. And what happened to Eli? Yes, ma'am.
Is he the one where the sons tried to sacrifice sacrifice something and then die right then?
You're thinking of Aaron's two sons, probably Leviticus chapter 10. What Eli's sons were doing, they were taking money to do things for people as priests. They were very corrupt, and they were
immoral too.
Yeah, they were very immoral, and that's what led to Eli's downfall. You remember Samuel is called in that dream, and the Holy Spirit keeps telling him, I'm summarizing, but he says you're going to be the high priest, and in all of that, God pronounces judgment on Eli that his two sons would die, and then he would die. Remember what the text says about Eli? He gotten really fat. That's kind of a harsh term, but he's brutally honest. He'd gotten really overweight. He was sitting down. He heard word about his two sons, and he just fell over dead like that.
No. He heard the word about the Ark of the Covenant, and he fell over dead. When he heard about his sons, he just grieved. But when they said the Ark of the Covenant is taken, then he said Eli fell over backwards because of the Ark and died.
Mm. I have to go back and look that up.
But right. It's in 1 Samuel 4:18.
Gotcha. Thank you. So
backwards too.
So he falls over dead backwards, right? He's dead. And God said to him, though, in pronouncing judgment, he said that no longer would his descendants be priests. Well, this gets its ultimate fulfillment, oddly enough, years down the road with Abiathar. Abiathar is the last of those descendants, and God finally, what he proclaimed way back in 1 Samuel is fulfilled here in 1 Kings, which tells us something. Sometimes God pronounces judgment. It's not immediate. It takes some, just because God pronounces it here doesn't mean it's going to happen immediately, but God always fulfills his word. He told him this is what was going to happen. This is how it played out. And so Abiathar being removed as priest was the fulfillment of that. So good comments. Thank you. So verse 7 tells us that he was removed, that Solomon conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and Abiathar the priest, and they followed Adonijah and helped him. That's a reference back to why he was upset. 1 Kings chapter 1 and verse 7. So that's why Solomon was upset. So you've got two guys he's talked to. He's had punishment proclaimed. Then you get a third guy, Joab. Now, real briefly, who's Joab? Joab's another interesting guy, isn't he?
He's a general. He was.
He's what?
A general.
He was a general. He was a general under David and under Solomon. He was the general that when David was having the issues with King Saul, he was the guy on David's side. Who was the general under Saul? Abner, right? And so you kind of had those two guys who were the generals over those two armies that fought one another. Joab's a man of war. We talked about that last week. I won't rehash all that, but Joab's a man of war. Now, we looked at some issues with him, and we're going to refer back to those as we read this. But if you'll go in your Bibles to chapter 2, 1 Kings 2, go down to verse 28. So what just happened with Abiathar? Well, he's been expelled. So verse 28 starts, when the news came to Joab, what news? Abiathar's been expelled. For Joab had supported Adonijah, although he had not supported Absalom. So again, another kind of mixed bag here of a guy. He has a very similar history to Abiathar in some ways, at least in who he supported. So Joab fled to the tent of the Lord and caught hold of the horns of the altar. And when it was told King Solomon, Joab has fled to the tent of the Lord. Now what tent is this, by the way, as we go on? Some translations may have tabernacle. What tent is it referring to?
He's the one that David built to hold the ark in Jerusalem.
This is a different one, all right? So remember, there's two tents. There's the tent that's with the Ark of the Covenant, and then there's the tent or tabernacle that's been set up on a mountain. And that's where Solomon had went to offer all those sacrifices. Remember, he offered those 1,000 sacrifices to establish his king, his reign? And so now you've got him, and he's run off to there. I think it's interesting he goes there. Isn't that fascinating? All the places Joab could go, he goes there. So Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, saying, strike him down. So he goes, he's not going to have a conversation with him. He says, just go, it's time to execute this guy. Now, we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second. So you have an interesting interaction. There's a little bit of humor in these things. I think we can laugh at it now. It's been long enough. But verse 30, he goes, he came to the tent of the Lord and said to him, the king commands, come out. What's his response? Nope. Nope. I will die here. Then Benaiah goes back to King Solomon. He says, thus said Joab, and thus he answered me. The king replied to him, all right, do as he has said, strike him down and bury him, and thus take away from me and from my father's house the guilt of the blood that Joab had shed without cause. What is that talking about? Remember, we talked about that last week.
He killed two people that were during peace when he wasn't at war.
Yeah.
Wasn't justified.
Now, he also killed Absalom, even though David hadn't asked him to, but that was during war, so David doesn't even bring up Absalom. Who were the two people?
Abner.
He's going to get the extra bonus points here. Good thing we spent all that time looking at it. Nobody?
Amasa.
Who?
Amasa.
Amasa. Good job. Amasa, who had been the general of who?
Of Saul.
Of Absalom. He'd been Absalom's general, whom David had appointed general over Joab when David was trying to reunite the country. So he killed those two guys in a time of peace, and David's very explicit about that. And so Solomon says, execute him, it's time for him to die, to take away the blood guilt that was upon his family. I'm almost reminded of what Saul did I'm not going to remember that group of people. Oh, well, there was a promise made to a group of people that they wouldn't be harmed, and Saul harmed them. He went in and slaughtered them. And to repay the debt, you remember there were sons, there were a family of Saul that was offered, 7 of them were executed to repay the blood debt. Well, in a very similar way, Solomon says the blood debt has to be repaid. Joab, you're going to pay it. And so he says, just go. If he wants to die there in the tent, let him die. Let him die there. Let's see, where are we at? So verse 30 and 31, Benaiah goes back to the tent. He says, the Lord commands, come out. Let's see, wait. I'm sorry, we did that. So let's go down to verse 33. He says, so shall their blood come back on the head of Joab and on the head of his descendants forever. That's pretty important too. Notice he's not just condemning Joab, but his entire family. You think again about Eli. We just had the situation with Eli resolved. And now Solomon, as God's mouthpiece, is now pronouncing judgment not just on Joab, but he says even on the descendants of Joab. So this is a pretty harsh punishment. But for David and for his descendants and for his house and for his throne, there shall be peace from the Lord forevermore in regard to this situation. And so verse 34, it says that Benaiah, he goes up, he strikes him down and puts him to death there at the tent, and he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. It's interesting, he goes to the tent. Why do you think that is? What's driving Joab? Do you think? And then we're speculating here, by the way. But if we were to speculate, well, what might be the reason he goes there?
Well, the tent was where they did service, worship, offered offerings to God. Obviously, there was an altar there because he grabbed hold of the horns of the altar, which so it was a place that the Jewish people would go to. And he may thought because he was inside the sanctuary, he wouldn't be killed. But you know, it's one thing that's interesting about this report. Reminds me of what the Jews did a long time later when they crucified Christ. And Paul said, I'm innocent, I'm free of this man's blood.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, let his blood be upon us and our children. Kind of the same kind of thing. Joab's blood was not being shed unjustly. And it wasn't on Solomon or David. Mm-hmm. It was on his own head.
And can you have a blood guilt when there's guilt on the person's part who died? No, right? Blood guilt always comes from an innocent party being harmed. And so in a way, the Israelites who cry out, let his blood be on, what they're asking for is for the guilt to be on them, which is kind of a really hard thing to kind of think about. Tells you where their heart is in that moment. But for whatever reason, he goes there. Maybe it's, was Joab a bad guy? Was he a good person or a bad person?
Joab.
Kind of a trick question, isn't it?
Yeah. He was both.
He's like a lot of people. Mm-hmm. He's got the good and he's got the bad.
There were some good things he did. I mean, he was a warrior for David. And he fought a lot of battles for him. He was a good general. He's like a lot of people. He's complicated and he's sinful, like all of us. But it's here where he dies. He's buried with his family's place. Verse 35, Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, is placed over the army. So now he's the new general and Zadok is the high priest in place of Abiathar. And so you have a change of leadership here. So that's Joab. Any questions about Joab before we move on? Yes, ma'am. That's the Ark of the Covenant. So that's a little different because the Ark of the Covenant is what had the presence of God. So this is an altar where sacrifices would be made, but not that particular object. This is not holy like the Ark of the Covenant's holy. It is interesting, and I'm not saying it wasn't sinful for him to grab hold of that. I think it's also another fascinating description that maybe in that way he's trying to plead to God, trying to reach out to God in these final moments. I don't know. It's fascinating. I don't think you'd normally would do that. I think only the high priest would touch the altar. I don't think this is normal practice. It's not like an altar call like some denominational churches will have where you come down, bow before the altar or whatever. He is reaching out to the physical altar in this tent.
Wasn't in the proper tabernacle.
Yeah, and so as we, my last few minutes here, I'm going to cover a couple of things real quick. That is important. So I want you to know that. I'm glad you said that. Is notice how even here, Things are getting altered. Now, the temple of Solomon has not been built yet. However, there still is the Ark of the Covenant. There still is the tabernacle. Yet they're separated. Notice where this is. This is on a mountain. Now, later on, we get to a guy named Jeroboam. He's going to move the place to worship to a mountain. So there's some interesting kind of shadows of things to come. But I think it's interesting to go along. History's not always, it's not clean, right? There are steps along the way that begin to move people away from God or toward God. It's not all just one motion, everything gets messed up. It wasn't like Jeroboam's coming on the scene and things got all messed up. There were things being put into place along the way where some of the people, and maybe a majority, were beginning to do things they shouldn't do. And so that's one thing I want us to be reminded of as we move through here. Let's go real quickly over a couple other guys. The next guy here is Shimei. Now Shimei, you remember, is the guy who is David's leaving. Absalom has his rebellion is going on. David's leaving Jerusalem. As he's leaving, Shimei is the guy out there cursing at him and throwing rocks. He's the old crazy guy, right? Yelling at the moon. But he's not. He's yelling and cussing at David. You remember, David's guy says, let's kill him. David says, no, let him talk, right? And so he's also the guy when David finally, you know, won his battle against Absalom. He's coming back in Jerusalem. He's the guy that came and begged for forgiveness. And David gave him that. David says, I will not harm you. All right, so that's just important to know. Let's go to verse 36. It says, the king sent and summoned Shimei. Now, what was David's request back in chapter 1? So another one that David says, do not let him go to the grave in peace. Don't let him go down as an old man. But notice what Solomon does. He calls him to him. He says, build yourself a house in Jerusalem and dwell there. So basically, he's being put on house arrest. He says, do not go out from there to any place whatever. Solomon's very clear here. That's where you live. That's where you stay. For on that day you go out and cross the brook Kidron, know for certain that you shall die. Your blood shall be on your own head. So Solomon's just not going to up and execute him. Right? David says, I'm not going to harm a hair on your head. He doesn't just up here and say, like he did with Joab, and say, go kill him. He says, I'm going to let you live, but I'm giving you restrictions. You leave, you're in trouble. And so he says, and notice what he says, your blood shall be on your own head. You're the one going to be guilty of this. Marking that very clearly. You notice in verse 38, he agrees to it. He says, what you say is good. This is Shimei talking to Solomon. As my lord the king has said, so will your servant do. He says, okay, I can live under this. I'll do it. Notice it says he lived in Jerusalem many days. Well, we actually know about how long it was. You go to the next little section here. He says he's there for, at the end, it happened at the end of 3 years. All right, so he's been there about 3 years so far. That two of his servants, which tells you something about Shimei. He's not some poor beggar on the street. He's got servants. What do they do? It says they ran away to Achish, the son of Maacah, the king of Gath. And when it was told Shimei, behold, your servants are in Gath. Who's Gath, by the way? Why do you know that name? Does that name ring a bell in your head? Gath? Who's from Gath? There's some famous person from Gath. All y'all know it. Goliath. His family's from Gath. Is that in Jerusalem? No. He's crossed the Kidron, right? He's gone. Those servants are. And that's important to note as we go on. It says, behold, your servants are in Gath. Verse 40, so what does he do? He's been there for 3 years. And Shimei rose, saddled a donkey, and went to Gath. What did Solomon say to him? You go across the Kidron, what's going to happen? You'll die. And so he goes to seek his servants. He went out and he brought his servants from Gath. So he goes back to Jerusalem. He'd been a smart guy. He just kept on going. Maybe he'd get a home in Gath. Right? But he comes back. Why would he come back? Why would he come back? And I got to end here. Huh?
Maybe they didn't notice I was gone.
Yeah, I went at nighttime. It was all dark. I told them not to tell anybody. Maybe he thought Solomon didn't really mean it. Maybe he's forgotten about it. He's forgotten about me. He never comes around. He never comes for dinner anymore. I haven't seen Solomon in a while. Well, we'll pick up here. Man, I hate doing that. But we're over time. We'll pick up with this guy next week and continue on.
You gotta clean up your room or get spanked. They clean it for a while, but after a while they kind of get loose.
Yeah.
They don't do it anymore until you get into their attention.
Yes, ma'am.
Is all of this retribution because of God's command or because of David?
So I think because of the way Solomon does it, I believe these are God's retribution on him. It's not just David. It's not just Solomon fulfilling his request. Because you notice what he does with Shimei. He doesn't just execute him. He says, okay, you can live here. That was the promise given to you. You're not going to be harmed, but you have to stay here. So he gave him a parameter to live in. He made the decision to leave. And that's going to cost him. And even with the way, Joab had blood guilt, so I think Solomon had every right to execute him. And you even notice with the other guys, Solomon doesn't do exactly what David told him to do. He tries to act, I believe, in wisdom and in God's direction on all those. Good question. All right, we'll dismiss for just a second. We'll get back in here for our devotional in just a moment. Thank you.